Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm Andrew Dowling with Home Healthcare News. Before we jump into my conversation with Dr. Clive Fields, the CMO and co-founder of VillageMD, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Home Care Homebase. This powerful, cloud-based home health software streamlines virtually every aspect of your business. Spend less time on paperwork and more time delivering quality care to the patients who need you. Visit hchb.com to learn more. Under Dr. Clive Fields' leadership, VillageMD has grown from a practice of 13 physicians in 2013 to a partnership with more than 2,600 physicians across 9 markets. That number will surely continue to climb, considering that Walgreens Boots Alliance will invest $1 billion in equity and convertible debt in the VillageMD over the next 3 years, including a $270 million equity investment completed in July. The great deal of that investment total will be used by VillageMD to fund the opening of the clinics and build the partnership, including integration with Walgreens digital assets. Walgreens Boots Alliance expects to hold an estimated 30% ownership interest in VillageMD at the completion of the investment. In July, Dr. Fields told Home Healthcare News he was eager to go back to the future and put VillageMD back into the business of home-based care. So, without further ado, let's get into it. Okay, Dr. Fields, can you begin with providing background on yourself and also how you got into the healthcare business before VillageMD?
Yeah, Andrew, I'd be happy to. So I am a family physician by training. I went to medical school at the Chicago Medical School and then finished residency at the Baylor College of Medicine here in Houston. And I actually joined my dad in practice in 1991. At the time, we were a two-man practice, which meant we were kind of one of the bigger practices in Houston because one was the normal size and two was considered a group. And I had a really great opportunity to learn at the feet of a true master of primary care. And I say that not out of deference to my father as a physician, but because he had actually trained in Scotland and then practiced in Canada before we moved to Houston, Texas. And as a result, having worked in two national healthcare systems, he practiced what we now call advanced primary care or patient-centered primary care. Effectively, all those words are really just different words for really good, comprehensive, continuous, and coordinated primary care, which is what he delivered and really how I learned to practice. It was through that type of practice that when results became available on cost and quality of populations that we were taking care of, that we recognized that we were actually getting different results than lots of other doctors. And again, it wasn't because I was smarter or he was smarter. It was a different approach to primary care. Ultimately, that success led to us growing our practice. And then about 7 years ago, an opportunity came about with my partner, Tim Berry and Paul Martino, to actually take a lot of the clinical strategies and protocols and thoughts and processes that we had developed at Village Family Practice and start VillageMD. And VillageMD was really started to really help independent doctors succeed in the move from fee-for-service to value. And we do that with teams that we provide for team-based care, with analytics and data, with access to contracts that are value-oriented and not only fee-for-service. And I'm thrilled to share with you, we've had a lot of success. We're now operating in 9 states with almost 2,500 primary care providers.
Fantastic. And can you share with me VillageMD's general operating model?
Yeah, we really have two operating models. When we first started VillageMD, we envisioned that we would be working almost exclusively with what we call affiliated physicians, that these were physicians that would stay in their own independent practice, that would use VillageMD to augment their services, either through contracts, care coordination, data analytics, and things like that. And that still is a significant part of our business. So what we saw over the last 6 or 7 years is that many of those doctors, especially in small practices, struggled with things like HR and buying health insurance and just the day-to-day operations of running a medical practice. We ended up buying a number of those practices, and those practices are now working with us in our consumer-facing brand, which is called Village Medical. So we really have two lines of business now. We have an affiliate model where doctors remain independent, as well as an employed or staff model where doctors effectively become full-time employees of Village Medical, which gives us the opportunity to not just manage the care coordination contracts and data, but actually to manage the day-to-day operations, which, as you know, for many small businesses, including medicine, have become more and more challenging.
Okay. And I know you have home focused segments of VillageMD. Do you work at all with home healthcare providers or non-medical home care agencies?
Yeah, absolutely. No, we don't replace home healthcare. Home healthcare providers have a unique skill set, and we try to identify those providers in each of our markets that deliver the highest quality of care, the best communication, and the most aggressive or appropriate follow-up. Village at Home is something that really also came out of my dad's early experience in Scotland, where at least 2 hours a day were built into every primary care doctor's schedule to do home visits. And home visits were just kind of part of what you did. It really wasn't distinguished in any way from traditional office-based care. What happened when I went into practice in the early 90s is that my dad had a number of these patients that he was still managing at home. And on the drive home, he would stop and take care of somebody and maybe stop, and sometimes for clinical reasons, sometimes it might be more for social support, sometimes it might be to drop off a prescription because a patient wasn't able to actually go out and pick up a prescription because of isolation or lack of access to transportation. And what I learned is that there are a number of patients, especially elderly and more complex patients, that when taken care of in the home through a comprehensive primary care model, you can achieve better patient satisfaction, better quality, lower cost, and in all honesty, an improvement or increase in provider satisfaction, because there's something to be said for growing a relationship with a patient outside of just the office. At the same time, we do not replace home health care. We are actually not doing a lot of the traditional things that home health care does, but being in a home with a comprehensive primary care model allows us to coordinate that care in ways that I think many physicians may not be able to if they don't have eyes and ears actually in a patient's home.
Would you have ever expected for, and we'll get to your successes in a minute, but when you started VillageMD with your co-founders, would you ever have predicted where you are now?
No, I mean, my mom still makes fun of me when I told my dad that we wanted to move from our 2,000 square foot office into a 10,000 square foot office in Houston and actually grow our practice. So I don't think anybody could have predicted not only the growth of VillageMD, but the need and continuing need for more coordinated and comprehensive and enhanced primary care services as really the biggest lever to solving the problem that we have in this country around the unsustainable cost of healthcare. So no, I kind of sit back and think, I'm not sure exactly how this happened, but it's a path that I am thrilled to be on, and along with all of my colleagues at VillageMD, I think it's a path that's likely in the very early innings of the game. And we look forward to growing and touching more patients and more providers in the near and in the midterm.
And so let's get to some of those successes. In July, which we cover on Home Healthcare News, Walgreens announced a massive amount of money would be put into VillageMD, and there's this partnership that's forming with them taking over. I believe it's 30% ownership. That was huge news. So Walgreens found and chose you. What do you do that to, and how did this relationship start in the first place?
Yes, so those are really good questions, and I'll take them kind of somewhat in order. If you think about the most common contact that a patient has with the healthcare system, it's with the primary care provider. And if you think of the most common intervention that a patient has to manage chronic disease, it's through a pharmaceutical intervention. So it's a little bit like hot dogs and mustard, that primary care and pharmacy services should be aligned and integrated in a way that's different than what it currently is. As we started to build out Village Medical in Houston, one of the first things that we did is we actually added a full service pharmacy to the office that I work in. And I think when I look back, I would say, what are we going to do with the pharmacist? We've got Walgreens down the road. We've got CVS. We've got Rite Aid. We've got HEB. Why do we need a pharmacist? And what happened is a couple of things. One, we saw significant improvement in patient satisfaction. And that's because through a collaborative care agreement, our pharmacists had access to our electronic medical records. So instead of just filling a prescription, they actually had the ability to look at a continuous and comprehensive medical record. As a result of that, they were able to help us optimize medications. They were able to help with generic substitutions if we wrote something non-formulary that there was an equivalent for, they could actually help us solve that problem. They could address some of the administrative burdens of pre-authorizations, all at the same time, driving improved compliance and adherence at the patient level. So our first experience with pharmacy was overwhelmingly positive, and it had nothing to do with, quote, making money in pharmacy. That was not our goal. Our goal was to drive a different clinical outcome, and pharmacy clearly showed that. We added another pharmacy in Houston. We added a pharmacy in one of our Kentucky offices. And around that time, we were approached by Walgreens. And they, at the time, were committed to a Ready Clinic, Minute Clinic type model. And when we shared our model, I think that they were really intrigued, not just with the additional capacity or ability of our providers to manage chronic disease through the continuum, but also the fact that we were already embedded in communities where people actually, where physicians were practicing, had panels, and had patients. So I know Walgreens, and you'd have to ask them, but they did a pretty extensive search looking for a primary care partner that lined up with their cultural values and their clinical goals. And we were thrilled probably a year and a half ago to open the first of five co-located Village Medical at Walgreens in the Houston market. And it was really based on the success of those five: patient satisfaction, physician satisfaction, and ultimately an improved clinical outcome that led to the investment and the expansion of the relationship that you read about just over a month ago.
Yeah. And so how is that investment going to accelerate what you guys are doing at VillageMD?
So like all businesses, sometimes investment in growth can exceed the return on that investment. And so we made a decision that instead of growing 5 or 10 of these locations, 5 or 10 Village Medical locations across a number of different markets, and ultimately building what we hope will be a consumer-facing brand nationally recognized for quality access and clinical results. And we decided that if we actually partnered and worked with somebody like Walgreens, that they would bring a couple of different things to us. They would bring, obviously, sites. They would bring physical locations that many times are the most convenient in every neighborhood that they operate on. And that includes visibility and parking and access and things like that. While at the same time, it would give us access to their pharmacy network, their pharmacists, the ability to work together in a clinical location that is both private and privileged and professional, but technologically and philosophically aligned with the pharmacy services. So it was something that really came about through kind of mutual, both cultural and clinical considerations. And again, we're super excited about it. We're excited about taking what we describe as an enhanced clinical model and enhanced primary care experience and through this relationship at a much faster rate to markets all across the country. One of the things we're most proud of is as we are identifying sites for these co-located clinics, over 50% of these sites are going to be opened in what are historically underserved communities. So I think you've heard the term healthcare deserts and pharmacy deserts and places like that. And we know that our clinical model is most effective in the management of complex and chronically ill patients. And those are the ones who most need a coordinated therapeutic experience from a pharmacist. So clinically, we lined up really, really well. And the investment gives us the opportunity, I think, to reach out and to touch more patients through our affiliated and partner physicians, and just at a rate that we never saw possible before.
Yeah. And so you talked about home-based, the deserts, and bringing care to people who really need it and are underserved. How does home-based care play into that? And how is home-based care in general a part of the mission between VillageMD and Walgreens?
Yeah, so I would say that home-based primary care, comprehensive home-based primary care, is just an integral part of our clinical model. We know there are those elderly and complex patients that for a variety of reasons cannot come to traditional healthcare environments. And it could be physical reasons. It could be cultural reasons. It could be transportation reasons. But we know that those patients are typically older, they are more complex, and they do require many times complex medication regimens. So the ability to actually coordinate pharmacy services with our Village at Home services, which is something that we offer in every market that we're in, was really a partnership that makes a lot of sense. Very similar to the way that we would partner with a home healthcare agency for home healthcare services that also aligned both culturally and clinically, you know, with our goals. So we see a Village at Home as really an integral part of our care model, of the way we deliver care to a select but complex group of patients. And we see the ability to deliver pharmacy, our therapeutics, to deliver things like pulse oximeters and thermometers and masks, which have obviously become critical in the time of COVID and COVID prevention. And so partnering with Walgreens and using their reach, both in pharmacy and retail, just really added to our ability to address those patients in the home.
Yeah. And so have your home-based care plans changed for the future because of COVID? Or is there anything that you have planned now because of COVID due to everything that's happened over the last 5 or 6 months?
Yeah. I mean, I think when we look back on COVID, we're going to see that COVID really was the initiator of some of the most rapid technology advancements in healthcare that we've seen, certainly in my career and probably far, far longer than that. And many doctors have pivoted to telehealth being a platform that most of us thought of as an urgent care platform prior to COVID. But now we see it not just as a platform that has been accepted by providers and by patients, but a number of new use cases have developed. So we think about wound care in the home, the ability of one of our wound care specialists to actually, through telehealth, be at the bedside virtually with either a nurse practitioner who may be doing a debridement or a treatment, or a home healthcare agency that's been engaged to take care of a wound. Those are things that we've talked about for a long time in medicine, but most of us were somewhat resistant to. At the same time, we're starting to see an increased use of remote patient monitoring. We're currently focused on our CHF and COPD patients, but the ability now to actually from the home get objective data about the status of our patients and the ability to actually get in front of exacerbations of their disease, we think is going to be critical. So the old idea of home-based care being solely delivered by a provider into a patient's home physically has rapidly been augmented with the ability to reach into their home through telehealth and the ability to recover objective data through remote patient monitoring.
So what are some of the things that you think are temporary from this time period in healthcare that others might think are permanent? And then vice versa, what do you think are some things that are permanent that others maybe think is temporary?
Yeah, so when you think about the three things that have really held back primary care in allowing the full, you know, breadth of the capabilities, the specialty, the impact populations, there's really three areas. One is a fee-for-service reimbursement system that never really made sense, typically drove up costs, and clearly with COVID showed that it's a much more fragile system than people believe. So we think one of the long-term consequences of COVID will likely be a move to a more prospective payment system where provider groups that take risk will be paid on cost, quality, you know, with a focus on wellness and prevention, not just in the management of sickness. The second one, I think I touched on a little bit, which is just the rapid movement or acceleration of technology, specifically around telehealth and remote patient monitoring. And along with that comes a barrier that we always thought was insurmountable, which was regulatory requirements. And what we've seen with COVID is that the government not only can follow, but the government and CMS and CMMI can actually lead. If you think about the regulatory changes that have happened during COVID, they're things that no one ever thought possible. And they were happening literally on a daily basis to meet the needs of providers and patients during this current pandemic. So we've seen this rapid acceleration of technology supported by regulatory relief, a move to prospective payment. And the third thing that I think is going to be a long-term consequence is what we've realized, especially at a time of COVID, is that certain patients are clearly at higher risk for COVID-related morbidity and mortality than others. But without a medical record and interoperability that allows us to see all the different silos of information related to a patient, it's really hard to risk stratify those patients to know exactly who you should be reaching out to who your efforts should be focused on, who you should be targeting with home delivery of medications, with masks, with information. So I think those are the three things that traditionally held primary care back. And I think we're going to see long-term changes in all three of those areas, mainly because somebody thought, or we all thought, it couldn't be done. And lo and behold, over the last 6 months, we've seen radical changes in all three of those areas.
Okay, Dr. Fields, what's a bold prediction that you have about healthcare over the next 5 years?
Gosh, bold prediction. I think we're going to recognize as a country that we have underinvested in primary care, and that the current spend, which is around 6.5% of the healthcare dollar, likely needs to be doubled. And if we do that, we'll actually see a decline in the total cost of care. At the same time, we're going to see improved quality, improved lifespan, and most importantly, we're going to meet patients' needs, whatever those patients' needs may be. So I'm excited about the future of primary care. I'm excited about growing care teams that include pharmacists, and I'm especially excited about taking the clinical platform, which has traditionally been an office that patients and doctors met at, and extending that into the home, both physically and through technology.
So you ultimately think that COVID will have a good impact on the industry by force?
Yeah, I mean, it's always hard to think of anything good coming out of something that causes this much disruption. Mm-hmm. But if you look back on it, I think there will be some long-term impact. There will be some positives that will come out of it, while at the same time, we're dealing with just some of the horrible morbidity, mortality, and disruption every day in our offices. But I think one of the things, to my point, is that at a time of COVID, when patients are looking for a trusted and consistent source of healthcare information, that they're not looking to hospitals, they're not looking to imaging centers, and they're not looking to rehab facilities. They're looking to primary care doctors to help guide them through really uncharted waters. So that type of recognition, I think, is ultimately what will lead to a doubling down on the investment and the value of primary care. And what I hope for you, me, and for the entire country is ultimately a healthcare system that's more focused on prevention and wellness and less focused on kind of the heroic management of patients.
All right, great. Thank you so much, doctor. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Andrew Dowlin, and this has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.